And here we are in beautiful downtown Sherman Oaks tonight. You know, I got an idea, Bobby. Let's tell a joke. Let's go to music. What do you think? Okay.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is 8 o'clock. It is Thursday night. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, sitting across the table from the lovely, efficient, and charming Bobby Jean Bell. Her husband is sitting over here in his chair with his headphones on, kicked back. Wow, that is really cool. I like it. I tried to get your show today, and it just would not link. I don't know what happened.
I don't know either. It was a great show, but there's a podcast link now, so you can listen to our wonderful interview with Adrienne Buckaroo Girl, phenomenal singer, songwriter, performer, and she will actually be our last concert of the year coming up on November 19th. And and then our second guest was a gal named Shannon, will not unfortunately remember her last name, but she started a group on Facebook called Horse Trails and Camping Across America that now has 44,000 followers.
Wow.
Fascinating story.
Wow.
Shannon, and you being an equestrian and horse person, you need to check out that website.
I will.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful site. So that was our morning show. So
Your concert last week was good?
Wonderful. Tom Corbett and the Tom Corbett Band, they gave us a great night. Really, really fun night. Yes, it was great.
Well, as you know, Russ and I were here with DK Christie last week. She was a ball.
It was very fun. I listened when I got home.
we were kind of a little bit mixed about because at first she didn't seem like she was going to be able to have fun with her. But she caved real fast.
Well, and it's so interesting about the ghost orchid.
I know, huh?
And about the orchid itself and just her passion for it. It's just fascinating.
And now Russ and I know more about orchids than we ever wanted to know in our lifetimes. Well, let's get to our guest. We have on with us tonight a gentleman named Gary Phillips. And not to be outdone or undone by his own successes, Gary has been the epitome. God, I'm an English major. The epitome of a writer in Los Angeles. From South Central, Gary went to Cal State Los Angeles, earned a BA in design, and while young, Gary developed an interest in pulp, detective, crime, fiction, taking inspiration from it all in creating his very first character, Ivan Monk. Gary has worked several jobs over the years, more specifically.
It's okay.
Specifically, co-director of a multicultural collaborative. He's written on race, politics, and detectives. Please give a warm Writer's Block welcome to Gary Phillips. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you, Jim and Bobby. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's wonderful having you here. I got to tell you, we're going through all the stuff that you've done. My computer, I don't think I have enough memory to put in everything that you've written and you've accomplished and you've done in your lifetime. You're a very busy guy.
Well, I try to keep busy. I suppose, you know, all those years growing up, my mom was a librarian, so I really had no choice but to read as a kid.
Wait a minute. I played sports. Wait a minute. You're a college-educated man. You're a writer.
That doesn't mean you have a love of reading.
You didn't just say librarian.
my mom was. So I grew up with books in the house, and I guess early on. I mean, like I said, I played sports, but I also I just loved to read, and I guess all those stories I read as a kid, and all those images in my head, and just would never leave me alone until. Until I finally figured out, well, I guess I have to write my own stories. I have to tell the tales I want to tell.
You know, when I was a kid, I used to love to get a hold of True Detective magazine. It was so much fun to read those stories. And I always wondered, are they really true?
Exactly.
You know? And I thought, wow, did that really happen? Is that guy still running around out here someplace with a knife in his hand?
But, exactly.
You know, and your bio, well, depending on which one you go to, I got into pulp early as a young man as well. I started reading it because it's fast tracked. It's you got Superman characters. You got everything.
Right.
And now there's pulp, and now we have the new pulp. Can you kind of explain the new pulp to us?
Real quick, or I guess as briefly as I can do it. Essentially, new pulp came about because some of these pulp characters, as you were just mentioning, some of the old characters, are obviously like Doc Savage and the Shadow, those are still those copyrights still exist. They're held by corporation Condé Nast. In fact, I think owns both. But some of the other characters from those 30s pulps, have now fallen into public domain, and so this kind of fostered a kind of renaissance with some of those folks who, you know, grew up reading those reprints or grew up reading those tales, and then wanted to then essentially tell those stories themselves. And so it kind of starts. In a certain way, it kind of starts as fan fiction, but now it's grown much bigger than that. And in fact, there are several, and in fact, I do some work for a couple of them, a couple of what we would call new pulp publishers who publish some of the old pulp characters in new stories, as well as foster original pulp characters as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, can I just jump in here for just a second? I know Jim has been talking about pulp as though, you know, all of our listeners understand what pulp is. And I my understanding is it actually goes back to really early times, for instance, with the beginning of the dime novel and being printed on very inexpensive paper. Is that right? Sort of how it got its historical roots and why it's called?
Sure, that's right, Bobby. Exactly right. That certainly during, because you're right. I mean, well, really, you can go all the way back to the Penny Dreadfuls, which were around. You know, these were tales about Wild Bill Hickok and Billy the Kid and what have you, right? Tall tales written about them, and so really, that's the, you know, you can go all the way back to there. But then certainly, it's a case that exactly right that the paper. Particularly in the 30s, when we're talking about sort of the height of the pulp magazine explosion, because in those days, you really only had radio or maybe a movie serial or the pulps to capture your imagination to spend that dime and then eventually a quarter, but you can get a lot you got a lot of entertainment for that dime and quarter. So that yes, the paper itself was like just cheap paper because those pulp magazines like we're mentioning Doc Savage and the Shadow they sold quite well in the hundreds of thousands, and so they printed up a lot of copies of those pulp magazines. But now pulp has come to mean, and from that time period, I think as Jim alluded to, that because those stories are fast-paced, kind of a staccato quality, pulp has come to mean a certain kind of style. I mean, you could look at, really, if you looked at the Indiana Jones movies, those were pulp-style movies, you know, in the vein of pulp.
Sure, and I think they were written that way on purpose.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Now, where does the comp, because I know you're also very much involved with graphic novels, and it seems like are there some shared kind of roots between, say, pulp and comic book and graphic novel?
Well, certainly there are, Bobby. Particularly, there's a character who now has kind of had a resurgence in some new pulp stories, as well as, in fact, in comics. There was a character in the pulps in the 30s. He was called the Black Bat, and this is before Batman. And in fact, Black Bat, at one point in the context of the stories, he was a district attorney. He was blinded by acid by a criminal, and he develops this kind of weird other sight, which we see now with Daredevil,
right.
in the comics, right? But then the Black Bat dressed, you know, all in black, and he had a kind of cape. in the style of Wings and all that sort of stuff. So some of that you know certainly gets borrowed, or you certainly see in the creation of Batman. Well, of course, Batman also takes a lot from The Shadow as well. So yeah, so certainly there's a big linkage between the pulps and then the oncoming of comics.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't you think that the pulp feeds into the national media, as far as it feeds into other dime novels, which feed into larger novels, which feed into larger novels, which feed into larger novels. Kind of like shark eating shark and getting killed by the great white.
Wait, I got to write that down. What was that now?
Exactly.
I couldn't do that again.
I mean, listen, but it's also the case that in the pulp magazines weren't just about costume vigilantes, although that was some of it, right?
Right.
They also had detectives. They had mm-hmm. cowboys.
Right.
They had science fiction stories. So you had a whole wide range of genres and kinds of settings that you would find in pulp magazines, and certainly, of course, and then you know, and this carries over even to today, mm-hmm. in the sense of that kind of not every movie or not every book is about this, but certainly those threads of, like, you know, ending on a cliffhanger and larger than life heroes and even flawed characters, you find those origins in pulp. And certainly now, and you see that again. The thread carries through into what's called new pulp. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you find, this may sound crazy, but as a woman, is this genre more written with men in mind as readers, or especially the older pulp stories? I know there was also romance. I know there were also pulp romances.
That's true. That's right. You're right. There was pulp romance. There was pulp. There was sports. There was plenty of sports stories, football stories, baseball, boxing, all kinds of things, walks of life and genres you would find in pulp magazines. Well, it's certainly the case. I mean, one of the distinctions between, so let's say, the old pulp and new pulp, and because I know I've edited and contributed stories to things like Black Pulp, Asian Pulp. Mm-hmm. So certainly it's the case that women and people of color were not, they were in old pulp stories, but weren't always in the roles of the hero or the A role. So they were maybe the sidekick or some kind of walk on and walk off kind of part. And so one of the things that you've definitely seen now in the context of new pulp is various writers, women, all kinds of folks, different ethnicities, different racial groups, writing in the genre. Some of these stories are set, like the stories we did for we put together for Black Pulp. A lot of those stories are set in the 20s and 30s, but yet they would have a black character as the main character, mm-hmm. kind of thing. So certainly it's the case that there's a kind of I don't want to say revisionism, that's not quite the word, but it certainly is the case that new pulp has opened up the arena to different kinds of stories that you wouldn't have found in the traditional pulp.
New points of view.
Right.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But bearing in mind that they're not written with to hit anybody over the head with polemics or anything like that. They're still written in an entertaining, fast-paced style.
Well,
deliver the thrills and chills that the old pulps delivered.
Well, and speaking of fast-paced style, your story in the Asian pulp is a romp. I mean, it just starts and it just goes and goes and goes.
It doesn't stop. I don't even know that Brett takes time to blink.
No, I
exactly,
don't think so.
Exactly. When he walks out of the ocean and then the next thing he's on the Sunset Strip, which is right. So and of course that story. It's called Brett Cotto, Agent of Code.
Right, right. Well, he's on the strip in a '68 Mustang fastback.
Right,
with
right,
machine
exactly,
guns.
And it's written with right. Of course, it is written with those kind of spy stories from the '60s. R. Man Flint, Man from U.N.C.L.E., that kind of flavor.
Absolutely,
and even
I loved it.
I know on you know, on TV now there's the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but the S.H.I.E.L.D. comic book from Marvel Comics started back then, you know, as part of, as an answer to the spy craze, and it was Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., in fact, and so in particular my story is a kind of homage to that time period of Marvel Comics when I was a kid reading those S.H.I.E.L.D. comics, those crazy spy comics, yeah.
So CODE stands for...
Confidential Operations for Defense and Enforcement.
Yeah. So are there, have you, this was the first one, of course, that I had read of yours. Are there more stories about the Agents of CODE, or will there be more coming?
There will be more coming, yes, Bobby. As time permits.
You mean Brett Kodo's coming back?
Well,
he's got to come back. He's got to come back.
Well, yeah, he already slept with the girl. Now he has to pay for her dinner.
And she made it alive to the end of the, you know, to the end of the story.
Well, and don't forget, she's also an agent of CODE.
Right.
She's no lightweight. She's a doctor.
Right. So, yeah. Right. Thank you for making her a doctor of quantum physics, as well as being, you know, also
cute,
a beautiful woman. Yes.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And
pretty handy with the kung fu.
You gotta have her wallflowers. And her
can't have any wallflowers
no,
of pulp.
And her
can't have that.
Her
no.
compact that pops open and becomes her radio, I think.
Exactly. The communicator, exactly.
Right.
That's right.
I was waiting for him to pull the Napoleon Solo pen out.
Yeah, the pen.
Right. That's right.
Hey Gary, I've got to run an ad. Hang on, we'll be back to you in 1 minute.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Hey, Jim Christina here for all you LTL shippers. Are you tired of your freight being reclassified? Tired of calling several freight companies for the best rates?
I want to stick with Asian Pulp for a little bit, and let's get into the genre.
And Target Freight Management has a solution for you. Their customized transportation management system protects all of their clients from situations just like yours. So if you're currently shipping a density-based product, you need to call Target Freight today. Target Freight is currently saving their clients between 15% and 20% of their freight costs. That's a huge savings to anyone. They'll even do a free cost analysis of your current freight to see if you're a good fit for their program, and not everyone is. The kicker is Target Freight is paid only on the contingency they can save you money. Call Target Freight today and just see what they can do for your company. Target Freight Management, 888-653-1323. That's 888-653-1323. Or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web.
And we are back. And for those of you who are used to the show, you'll just know that Ronan, our engineer, just ran in here again, and because I'm stupid. So,
what we said was that we were having a great time.
We were. We didn't know what to talk about, and now we know. And I'm sure you heard it.
And we want to talk more about Asian Pulp.
Well, let me give out the phone numbers. For anybody who wants to call and talk to Gary, the number is 818-602-4929. That number here is 818-602-4929. And the Writer's Block is also brought to you by Black Dog Publishing of Simi Valley and Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall, California.
And we are having a great time.
We are having a wonderful time. Gary, you're great. I'm just loving this.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. You guys are good interviewers.
Okay, can we stick with Asian Pulp for a little while? Because I'm really interested in this genre.
Sure.
I had never read any Asian Pulp before. I don't know how many people actually have, other than maybe Asians. I mean, it's a whole new genre for me, and I was fascinated by it. I really was, and I kind of got halfway through one of the Asian cowboy stories before I had to quit reading and come here. So, but it was, the whole thing is fascinating.
How did you?
Good. Well, it's good. To put it in the lineage, Asian Pulp, which is a collection, as the title certainly suggests, it's a collection of stories where. Asian Pacific Islanders or East Asians are the central character, as opposed to the usual role in, at least in the traditional pulps, of being the so-called, you know, yellow peril, whether it's Fu Manchu or the Yellow Claw or something like that.
Right.
So flipping that script, these are characters, as you mentioned, Jim, but cowboys and spies and detectives, etc. Written by I'm not Asian, but you don't have to be Asian to write Asian characters, as well as several Asian American writers in the mix. And I should mention Asian Pulp, which is from Pro Se Press, is a kind of companion anthology to Black Pulp, which came out a couple of years ago, which I co-edited Black Pulp, and as well as contributed a story to that, and that kind of set the ball rolling, and Black Pulp did pretty well. We had an introduction by Walter Mosley. We had stories by Joe Lansdale and me and my buddy Gar Haywood, who's also a crime fiction writer, and we had a great lineup of folks, and as I said, that anthology did quite well, which has now led us to Asian Pulp. And then I believe I know this because I've been editing the stories, Black Pulp 2 is on the horizon for next year.
How do you find the authors to contribute? Did they write stories specifically for, let's say, the Asian Pulp anthology, or were those stories already, you know, in existence and you gathered them into this compilation?
Yeah, that's a good question, Bobby. Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. In particular, in Asian Pulp, all the stories are original. So in Asian Pulp, I did not edit Asian Pulp, but I did a story for it. And I know in the process of putting it together, Tommy Hancock, who's the editor-in-chief of Pro Se, he asked me for some names, and those led to other people. And then so he sort of put out an invitation, because it wasn't because sometimes anthologies have what they call an open call, and sometimes the anthologies are invite. Usually an invite will come from the publisher or from the editor to a writer and say, look, here's the premise of what we're doing. Are you interested in putting a story together for that? And so that was how Asian Pulp, as I said, following on the heels of Black Pulp, how Asian Pulp came about. Yeah.
Tell me the difference between hard-boiled and noir. And pulp.
All right. I think I can answer that, because I have to answer that occasionally. To me, noir is a doomed character on a doomed path.
Oh.
Hard-boiled is tough characters, and there could be some doom in that world. But usually in a hard-boiled story, at the end of it, big justice is not achieved, but a small bit of justice is achieved. The Maltese Falcon, which is a great story by Dashiell Hammett, mm-hmm. and really the template for a lot of stories to come after it, is a great example of both a hard-boiled story and a story that gets us into some noir, because, of course, in the end, he has to send the woman up. She killed his partner.
Right.
He didn't like his partner, but she killed him, and she has to pay the price for that. Maybe he loves her, maybe he doesn't love her. But nonetheless, you know, she's got a swing for it. So there's that quality to it as well. And pulp, as we said, you know, sort of pulp is fast-paced, is usually larger-than-life characters or a larger-than-life situation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of a real bare but basic distinction between sort of these three categories. So hard-boiled tends to be more on the ground, more small stakes, if you will, but more of a emotional impact.
Mm.
Noir also has an emotional impact, but generally noir, and a lot of times in noir, you know, the point of view is from the you wouldn't even call that person the hero. You would call them sort of the anti-hero or certainly the protagonist,
right,
but
right.
Not necessarily the hero, right?
Yeah.
Whereas in a hard-boiled story, you might have a hero. I mean, that hero might be flawed, but that you still have some of those characteristics we would recognize as a hero.
Right.
And in pulp, again, you would also have a hero. But again, you know, pulp has the two great examples, of course, and we mentioned them earlier on, are Doc Savage and The Shadow. Doc Savage is a public figure, right? He has no, I mean, he's called Doc because he's got, you know, degrees in, you know, chemistry and medicine, et cetera. But he's literally, right, he's the man of bronze. So he's literally like
right.
this golden child. He's like this, you know, super genius,
right.
Super fighter, all this sort of stuff. But he's a public figure. The Shadow, on the other hand, as his name would tell us, is a creature of the dark. And in fact, the Shadow has several identities. Lamont Cranston is actually not who he really is, right? He took over Lamont. Mark Ranson's life. And so the Shadow is operates that way, right? He operates in secret, and he has a network of aides and agents and what have you. And so here's two good examples of these sort of pulp icons who are both, you know, one's light and one's darkness.
Mm-hmm. You know, a film noir that comes to mind that I think is a perfect classic example is Double Indemnity.
Yes.
Fred McMurray, right. What's her name? Barbara Stanwyck. Mm-hmm. Great story. And
great story.
Tragic
ending. And the original story is really just a novella by James M. Cain. Mm-hmm. And again, it's a perfect example of noir, because if you read the story, that story is so old, it was Hollywood Land, right? That was the original song, right? And he refers to it in the beginning, opening pages of the story. Neff, the guy who was essentially the, one of the perpetrators in the story is telling us the story,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
He's telling us about his fall. He's telling us the crime that he committed.
Right. Right.
And how he got, you know, what led him there, how he got to that situation.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now let me bring up something. Let's get away from Asian pulp for just a little bit. And
sure.
I have to be quite honest here. I went onto your website, and then I went to Amazon, and I looked at all of the books that Gary Phillips has written over the years.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my Lord. You must have a tired finger. I went eeny, meeny, miny, mo, closed my eyes, and dropped my finger on a title. And the title I dropped onto and downloaded and read in one day, Gary, one day. Was mm-hmm. Warlord of Willow Ridge.
Oh, well. Oh, God bless you. Yeah.
What a great story.
Oh, good.
I love that guy, O'Connor. He just, I mean.
speaking of guys who are not quite in the hero mode, but not quite the villain either.
I mean, talk about a tarnished rose. Holy crap. The whole book was just great.
Oh, good. Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate that.
Not a problem. I don't know how long ago you wrote that.
2012, I think it was published.
Really?
Yeah. So not too long ago.
Yeah. And you know, the sad part is there are places like that out in the Inland Empire. That are just people walking away from.
That's it. Well, real quick, so the setup of the story is, in the classic Western, as we know, the stranger arrives on his horse. Well,
right.
In this case, the stranger arrives on his motorcycle.
That doesn't run
anymore. Right, and the motorcycle's, but he got it at auction, so it's failing. You know, the cylinder's going, and he knows it's not going to last. He's trying to get from point A, he's trying to get up to the Bay Area, but he knows he's not going to make it. And so he comes, you know, in classic Western tradition, he comes over the rise, it's at night, and he looks down, and he sees this subdivision. You know, he sees lights on the subdivision. And he figures, well, all right, you know, maybe there's a motel around there or someplace, you know, someplace I can just hole up for the night. And one thing leads to another. He winds up, of course, squatting in a house that's been, as we used to say, underwater, because it's coming out of the Great Recession and such of 08. And as the title suggests, right, the Warlord of Willow Ridge, which is the Willow Ridge being the name of the subdivision,
right?
He winds up a kind of warlord there, somewhat for his own means, right, his own agenda,
right.
But then he also gets involved in the lives of the people there,
right. And he does some good, and he's planning yet another crime while he's doing it.
That's right.
It's just a great story, and it was such a fast read, and it just flew by. In fact, I cracked it open Monday or Sunday, Saturday morning, and I was done by 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon.
Man, right on. Well,
and I showed my wife Jerry, who incidentally is our bookie. You've been dealing with Jerry too. But I said, you got to read this book. And she goes, well, that's not my style. I said, well, yeah, but I mean,
right.
A good read is a good read. It doesn't matter whether it's your style.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate that.
It's like we had D.K. Christie, as I mentioned earlier in the show, on last week, and she wrote a book called The Ghost Orchid. And my other co-host, who's in when Bobby can't be here, Russ Savison, and I sat and just loved the book. Another one through in a day and a half, I think. So, but your writing style is so good. Do you teach writing?
Well, thank you. I do, actually. Yeah, I teach in the MFA program at Antioch.
It shows.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But as we talked about, ultimately I write the stuff I want to read, and what's the expression? I write by ear, right? So I don't. Uh-huh. I have no formal training as a writer, other than just now years of reading a lot of material, and then thinking. And just working hard to say, I want to entertain, but I want to have a little something grounding the characters. Hopefully, you bring a little something to the table, mm-hmm. and you want to. I live in the skin of the characters, and I figure if I can live in their skin, then maybe that gets across to the reader. You know,
it does.
Yeah. Well, good.
Now you have a new book that was published just in October. Is it Beat, Slay, Love?
Yes. So, Beat, Slay, Love. One chef's hunger for delicious revenge, as the title suggests. It's a send up of foodie thrillers, so-called chick lit, but it's a great, fun, dark comedy romp. And let me say, going further, that I'm not the only writer. But this is an open secret. On the cover of the book, you'll just say it'll says by Thalia Filbert. But Thalia Filbert is five of us. In fact, I'm the only man, though. Katie Munger, Lisa McClendon, Kate Flora, and Taffy Cannon, and I, and are members of a blog, and we take turns, posting our posts on the blog, and I think it was Lisa or Katie, but I think it was Lisa and Katie maybe together. Anyway, about a year and a half ago, I had the idea. Well, why? What about if we did? There's a kind of thing called the round robin novel. And in fact, in the 60s, I guess the round robin novel goes back even further than that. But in the 60s, there was a kind of famous novel called Naked Came the Stranger.
Right.
Where several writers, got together. I think they were drunk, by the way, at the time.
Well, they probably
said,
were.
we can write a bestseller, And the idea being that, you write a chapter, you write so many words, and you kind of box the other person coming in, put them a little bit in the corner, see what they do to get the hero or the protagonist out of the predicament you've put them in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in our case, we knew that we weren't quite going to do that, because we worked out the outline and we knew kind of the idea of what we were going to do, which is essentially somebody is knocking off the celebrity chefs across the country in very flamboyant ways. and so knowing that... But then working out who our main characters were, we each took two turns at the writing, so that somebody would start, then we'd get the pages and we'd know where they ended, and we'd start and we'd take off, and in that way we knew the story we wanted to tell. And it does get outlandish. It does get crazy because it's meant to. As I said, it's meant to be a send-up. It's meant to be read firmly with tongue in cheek. But I think people will enjoy the read. We've got some great positive reviews up on Amazon already. And Lisa and Katie, in particular, were our editors, and so they did a great job of I think seamlessly. Making the pages flow, one, two, three. Everybody has their own kind of style, and so in some cases we had to change some words or change some phrasings to make it consistent throughout, to really give a sense of flow and pace, so that you didn't come to all of a sudden to come to this chapter and it's some it is jarring because the style is so different.
But
I think people will find it really flows well and works together. In a very tight fashion to really tell a great thriller, great
mm-hmm.
story.
Mm-hmm.
So fun. I have this quote here by Shirlane Harris of True Blood fame, and she wrote, "Everything you'd want when you bite into a dish. Suspense, spice, and a new take on an old classic." And I know I can't wait to get into it myself.
Does that make it like five swelled heads?
It might be. But because we had to go through that process of writing is always about killing your darlings, right?
Sure.
So in this case, even in Beats Lay Love, there were certain scenes that some of us had in the manuscript, mm-hmm. but because those scenes were fine in and of themselves, mm-hmm. but because they didn't quite work in the context of telling the story, telling what the progress of our anti-hero was, those scenes had to go, and we had spirited discussions about that, but in the end, it worked out for the best, and it really made a great, I think, compelling read and a fast-paced kind of story that I think people will get a kick out of.
Well, we got to leave you again for another ad, and we'll be back in about 45 seconds.
Sure.
So hang tough, we'll be right back.
Hey, Jim Christina here for TFM Truckload, a division of Target Freight Management. TFM is here to help you with all of your truckload and railroad shipping needs. So if you want a reputable company who is going to work hard to find you the best rates while maintaining award-winning service, TFM is who you need to call. When TFM Truckload books a truck for your company, it shows up 100% of the time. If you want a reliable truckload broker, then you need to call TFM Truckload today, toll-free at 1-844-653-7789. That's 844-653-7789. Or catch them at www.targetfmi.com on the web.
And we're back. And if you're just now joining us, we're in the studio. Well, actually, Bobby and I are in the studio. Gary's sitting in his office at home. but we're on the air with Gary Phillips, just accomplished writer. He's got to have the busiest typewriter in town. And if you want to talk to Gary, the number here is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And in a few minutes, we're going to start a new feature here in the Writer's Block. Every other week, we'll be joined about the last 7 to 10 minutes by Henry Park, who writes Henry's Western Roundup.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be joining us and giving us an idea of what's going to be coming out in his blog on Sunday. And just kind of keep everybody informed. So that's coming up right now. And we're back with Gary Wright at We Speak.
So we have the question of the night.
We do. And Bobby's going to answer.
All right.
We love to ask all of our guests, Gary, what is writer's block? Is it something that you face? And if so, how do you deal with it? Or is it nothing at all?
I would never say it's nothing at all. I certainly hit an impasse now and then as I'm writing. In fact, I guess I better knock wood, but not quite an impasse. But there's a short story I'm working on that's perplexing even me. But that's okay. And what I generally do is I'll stop writing that and then maybe I will I'll go do yard work, or I'll go to the gym, or I'll do something else. And I'll think about the story, or I'll think about where I'm at in the story. And then, not that it comes to me. I wish it would come to me in a dream. It never comes to me in a dream, which is what I'd like, right? Mm. I'd like all the answers to come to me in a dream.
Sure. and you remember them.
And you remember it.
You know, and it's funny enough, as Jim was saying, you know, like on Warlord of Willow Ridge, and I work from an outline. When I'm working a novel, I work from a fairly tight outline. And I was like 40,000 words into that book, and I finally figured out what the book was about. But, you know, I was happy that I finally figured out what the book was about, which meant then I could go back and rewrite some pages and some passages, foreshadowing things to come, but knowing that now that's what I wanted, you know, to happen in the book. Writing in a certain way, you know, I come from a working class family. Like, my mom was a librarian, and my dad was a mechanic. Writing's a job, you know. I write on deadline, or I write because I got an advance and I got to turn in the story, I got to turn in the novel, or turn in the comic book, whatever it is, you know. But it's a craft too, right? So it's both those things. It's both a kind of it's not an assembly line, because it isn't, because I think you've got to push yourself as a writer. I think you've got to put yourself out there as a writer. And so I guess I knock wood and say that I don't believe in writer's block in that way. In other words, I don't sit around and wait for the muse to hit me, but I also know that there are times when I when I just can't write my way out of it, right? That I'm being by rote, or I'm repeating myself, or it's being redundant. It's just not, you know. And you can read it, and you go, man, you know, what is this I'm writing? I have to stop. I have to go do something else. Mm-hmm. I have to decompress. I have to, you know, I'm not the most spiritual person, but I do believe there's a kind of zen that you got to want to achieve, you know. And then once I've kind of get to that state, and then can see a little bit of that light at the end of the tunnel, then I can come back to it and get I'm charged up again, and I can figure out, okay, this is what I want. This is how I'm going to get myself out of where I'm at, and really try to tell the story I want to tell.
Wow, that was quite an answer.
That's a great answer. Do you work on several projects at one time, or do you work on one project and get it completed and then work on the next one?
Well, let me put it this way. You know, this is Hollywood, so we've all written scripts and pitched those around. So if I'm working on a prose novel or a novella or a short story, usually I can write that, say, in the morning, and if I'm working a script, I can go to that, because it's a different kind of writing, it's a different approach to writing, or even a comic book script, I can do that in the afternoon.
Great.
But if it's two projects that are kind of in the same medium, you know, in the same media, I once had to write two books at the same time, you know, two Good deadlines. Luck. And that, it just messed me up, because I just couldn't figure out, you know, I'd get confused on scenes, I'd get confused on characters.
Right, right.
If the projects are distinct enough, like, for instance, I was working on a short story not too long ago, a long short story. In fact, it was a Western short story, a 15,000-word story.
Oh, we just lost.
And I had to do this essay. And I could do those kind of not, you know what I mean? I could work on the short story one day and do the essay the next day, and that didn't mess me up, because, you know, it's just two different kinds
right.
of...
Sure.
Right.
Two different kinds of styles, two different kinds of approaches. So I guess that's the answer. That's really the answer.
Okay, well, we're going to have to cut this short, because we have our Henry Parks calling in. You want to stay on the line and chat with him?
No, I'm gonna get off now, because I'm actually gonna go. I'm gonna actually go have that martini now.
Oh, good man, love your style.
I knew.
Hang on just a second.
Okay,
Henry, is this you?
Yes, it is.
Oh, hey! Hang on just a second, Henry.
You bet.
Okay, resume call. Merge calls.
Neither
okay.
I.
All right, Gary, are you there?
Great stories. Great stories.
Thanks for being on. We absolutely, it was a delight. And look, watch your mailbox for your coffee mug. I got one going to be coming out to you.
Excellent.
And thank you so much for spending
Send me the link to get to the podcast, will you guys?
Yes, done
deal.
We will.
And thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
I had a great time. Thanks a lot, Jim and Bobby. I had a wonderful time.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay, we're going to go to Henry now. So take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Henry!
Yes!
What's
hey guys,
going on,
how you doing?
Pal? We're good.
We're good. What's up with you?
Well, just, you know, the usual plugging away, trying to write for the True West and write the Roundup and trying to get a script written. I got to tell you, I've been really enjoying the show. I was not familiar with Gary Phillips, but very interesting guy.
Isn't
very
he?
Entertaining.
Isn't he? Bobby and I have just been sitting here just enthralled.
He's just having a great time.
Much like we were when you were here, Henry.
Oh, you're very kind.
I'm a good stroker, huh?
One of the best.
There you go.
Okay,
yeah, we love
best.
You too. Talk to us about your blog coming up on Sunday. What do you got going?
Well, I've got an interesting lead story in the coming Sunday's Henry's Western Roundup. Last week, I was at Big Sky Movie Ranch in the Simi Valley for the first time, which is just unbelievably beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
To watch some of the shooting of a new Western called Traded. It's a story very much in the vein of the Liam Neeson Taken films.
Oh, okay.
Got a father searching for his missing daughter, only it's set in the Old West. She goes off to be a Harvey girl and disappears.
Oh.
I love history, so that Harvey girls comes in, I get excited.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, anyhow, a true story. My wife's mother was a Harvey girl.
Wow.
I'm sorry?
My wife's mother was a Harvey girl.
Really?
Yeah.
By the way, have you seen, there's a terrific documentary, The Harvey Girls, Opportunity Bound?
I have not.
Because that's around, and it's really well worth seeing. Oh, but anyhow, back
anyway.
To this one, Traded. It stars Michael Paré as the father, and in the Roundup, I'll have my interview with him and the film's director, Timothy Woodward Jr., And, you know, Michael is one of the stars of another Western that's in release right now, Bone Tomahawk, with Kurt Russell.
Right, right, right. You can't buy it on Netflix yet, though, or Amazon.
Yeah, you can or cannot?
You cannot. You can put it in your queue to buy it.
I thought it was going to be, you know, the same day it hit theaters and home video.
I went and looked, and I couldn't buy it. I could just put it in my queue to buy it later.
I see.
Maybe they didn't like me. Oh. I don't know.
Oh, I wouldn't take it personally. but also in traded are Chris Christopherson and Trace Adkins. And, of course, Chris is Western movie credentials.
Absolutely.
But so does Trace Adkins.
Right, he does.
A really nice role in Wyatt Earp's Revenge. And last year, he was the lead in a Canadian film version of The Virginian with Ron Perlman as Judge Garth.
Oh, he also did a movie with Kenny Rogers. I believe
that's right. He's done a few westerns. And I'll also have my review of a very interesting book called "Shooting Scripts from Pulp Westerns to Film." So another pulp related thing. And this is by film historian and western novelist Bob Hertzberg, and he examines the novels and the films made from them by seven of the top western writers, people like Louis L'Amour, Ernest Haycox, my personal favorite Luke Short. And I'm sure he's going to make some serious enemies with this one. He really rakes some very popular writers over the literary coals.
Really?
He is no fan of Frank Gruber or Louis L'Amour.
I'm going to be buying that book.
Yeah, me too.
Let me write that down.
So that's what I've got coming up there. Oh, and in the new issue of True West that's hitting the stands any day now, in honor of the upcoming Leo DiCaprio film, The Revenant, I list my picks of the 10 best Mountain Men movies.
Ooh.
Is Mountain Men one of them?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, I got to talk to Charlton Heston's son, Fraser Heston, who wrote the picture. About the making of it.
Oh, so, my God, that movie is just tremendous.
Isn't that good stuff?
It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
In a couple of weeks, as long as, you know, I'm being self-promoting, Saturday, November 14th, I'm going to be at the Autry to introduce Clint Eastwood's film, The Outlaw Josie Wells.
Oh, great.
Oh, good for you.
What's the date again?
Oh, it's Saturday, November 14th.
Because, what time is that? Our listeners will want to know.
I think they're 1:30.
Okay.
Saturday the 14th at 1:30.
At 1:30 at the Autry in the Wells Fargo Theater, I'm assuming, is where they'll show the
film.
And, of course, Thursday the 12th, you'll be here on the Writer's Block with us.
Absolutely.
See how this works out?
So, Henry, give our listeners how they can find your blog. Where do they go?
Oh, sure. It's Henry's Western Henry's Western Roundup, and it's henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Right, and we should be sure to always be posting it on the Writer's Block Facebook page also.
I appreciate that very much.
Not a worry, and we love having you on.
Well, thank you. It's so much fun to talk to you guys, always.
But, you know, it's just going to be a great feature for us. And you know, you're such a personable guy. Wink, wink. And, and you know, we just love talking to you. So, you know, you're always welcome. You can even call in when you're not on.
Well, and then talk to myself. No, that wouldn't make sense.
Well, you can do that, too. Something tells me you already do enough of that, so I don't know.
Oh, word has gotten out.
Yeah. Well, you know, court talks.
He does. Yeah. Actually, he did a beautiful job. I'm trying to remember. He introduced the film at the Autry, not this month, but last month. Trail. Errol Flynn. I'm sorry, I'm going blank as usual.
Something Trail with Errol Flynn.
Santa Fe Trail.
Santa Fe Trail.
The last one he did with Olivia de Havilland.
Oh. Okay.
Wonderful picture. And really strange because they could not decide whether or not abolitionists were heroes or villains. So it's half and half.
Huh. Uh-huh. I haven't seen that movie in 100 years, I'll bet. Well, not that long.
Not quite that long.
Yeah, well, not 50 years. Okay. kind of finished. How old are you? 2 years older than Jesus. All right.
The ramblings of a madman.
The ramblings of a madman. Thanks for calling in, Henry. We love you.
Thanks. Great talking to you. Have a great one.
You we'll too. Talk to you soon.
Great.
Bye-bye. That was Henry Park from Henry's Western Roundup.
What a fun night.
What a fun night.
We have to make sure we're always posting his blog over on the Writer's Block.
Yes. I'll let you do that.
Okay. All right. I'll write that down. Another
because
job for me.
You're the one that's up until 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning, not me. I'm getting up then.
And once again, we do encourage you, if you are a writer or a blogger, please go ahead and post on the Writer's Block page, Writer's Block Radio Show Facebook page.
That is correct.
We want to know what you're up to.
That is correct. And if you're looking to get a spot on the Writer's Block, just leave a message there for us, and we'll forward it to the bookie who does all our booking for us. And next week, we have one of my very favorite people coming in, Andrea Kidd.
It's going to be so fun.
Oh, my gosh. She's going to be speechless, but which is unusual for Andrea.
I was going to say, I want to see that. I have to get a photograph of her
but
speechless.
She is a cowboy poet, but she does her poetry to music, and it's just the most beautiful thing. Her CD, Sespe Sky, is one of my very favorite CDs in the world, and she's just the loveliest person and the nicest lady.
Equestrian, well-known trainer.
And she's bringing in, I believe, her producer, Christine Law?
Laws. Yeah. Or Law from, now I'm having the brain freeze.
I know. I don't remember the name of the record company, but I'm sure they'll remind us next week.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So we're really looking forward to Andrea. Then after Andrea, on the 12th and the 19th of November, Bobby Jean will not be in studio with us. So it'll be me and Russ. Bobby Jean and Jim Bell will be in Albuquerque or someplace out there.
Yes,
on the 12th,
on the
13th,
12th,
and 14th.
We'll be traveling to Albuquerque to attend a convention.
WMA.
And then the 19th, we'll be concert night again.
Yep, and then the 19th is concert night. Right. So, and then, of course, the following week is Thanksgiving. We'll be broadcasting what we were broadcasting, a rebroadcast.
Right.
And then we have first 3 weeks in December, and then we're broadcasting 2 weeks rebroadcasts.
Right.
And then we start the new year with Craig Johnson.
Oh, wow.
Longmire.
Yes. What an adventure this has been.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't this just been the funnest year?
Just so fun. And all of our authors, all of our guests have been so entertaining as well.
Jerry was great.
Oh, my gosh. I want to read everything.
he's so articulate.
We didn't ask him, but he has a fantastic website, which is just GaryPhillips.com.
Yeah.
There is so much on that website. You click a book, and off to the right will come up all the reviews of it.
There's video, radio interviews, there's everything on there.
You could just spend hours there. Phenomenal website. Yeah.
So, unfortunately, it is now time for us to depart. We have to leave you, and we will be seeing you again, well, actually talking to you again, next Thursday with Andrea Kidd. And as Court Joyner likes to tell us, fight on and write on.
Right on.
And it's Thursday, and we're out of here soon. Actually, right now. We'll be right back.